Blog Talk Radio.
Good Friday afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this special edition of Connecting the Dots with host Casey Tuckness and special co-host Damon Deaton. Today is February the 2nd, 2018, and I would like to, I think that it's very necessary for me to share my personal journey. I have been doing a series with Connecting the Dots with Casey Tuckness and Damon Deaton regarding overcoming obstacles. And our very first show, we had the founder of Make-A-Wish Foundation, Frank Shankwitz, who was a former homicide detective and highway patrolman. We had Edie Hand, who is an author of 20-plus books, first cousin to Elvis Presley, just an amazing role model. She's very big with the doing fundraising for children's hospitals. We also had Michelle Patterson, who took over the California Women's Conference for Maria Shriver. We had Keith Mitchell, who was former NFL player. Paces Securities and Investigations out of Bernie, Texas. Hollywood Weekly out of Los Angeles, California. And Mike Sasser, author, writer, and motivational speaker out of The Woodlands, Texas. And without further ado, I would like to introduce Damon Deaton, who is my absolute amazing mentor. Everybody should have Damon as their mentor, their pastor, their friend, their brother in Christ. So Damon, I just personally, I want to thank you for everything you've done for me, especially since my father passed 6 months ago, 6 months and a week ago. I've been on sabbatical for 6 months. And I just got off last week. As you all know, I accepted the show 2 weeks prior to ending my sabbatical. I think sabbaticals are very important for everyone if they can afford to do so. And I say that because it's very good for you to clear your head, know where you're going, and, without, like they say, without putting the oxygen mask on, others first, if you wait to put yours on, then you can't help anyone. And my journey the past 10 years is what we're going to be discussing today. But Damon, I would like to bring you in. And are you there?
I am here, Casey, and I appreciate that that introduction as always. And most certainly, we all need someone that will walk with us down the journeys of life. And it's important that we have those connections, ergo connecting the dots. And I just want to say to our listeners that I certainly, stand ready to be of whatever help or support I can be. We pastor a small community church in the Amarillo, Texas area, and I have just always had a passion for people. And Casey can tell you, at some point in time, we may talk about her trip to Bali. If you ever want to find out how much some of your friends will tolerate, just send them to Bali during the middle of a volcano erupting, and you'll find out if they're worth keeping around as your friends or not.
That means you're not going anywhere because I'm not letting you go.
Yeah, that's right. And for those of you that would be interested, I have named KC the Volcano Lady now. We're not going to do a sequel to Joe versus the Volcano because it would be too graphic. But nevertheless, today we just really felt like it was important that people hear KC's story. Every one of us have a story. Every one of us have a path through life where there have been ups and downs, where there have been potholes, and where there have been dead ends that could have overwhelmed us. And you may be at that point right now in your life. You may be at a point where it's just like, I don't even know if I can tie a knot in the end of the rope and hang on. We want you to know that there is hope, that there is. I've learned never to say to receive a no. I mean, unless it's very clear that something's not going to work, you just keep pressing on. God has his no's, but he has his yeses and he has his waits, and that's the way it is in life. And so as you hear KC's story and the challenges that she's been through, I want to remind you that whether it's Casey or myself or anyone else, we need each other, and we need to understand that the importance of bearing each other's burdens, as the Bible says, is important, particularly in this day and time. There's a lot of garbage going on. There's a lot of turmoil in our nation. There's a lot of turmoil in the world. We may not can change the world, but we can change our corner of the neighborhood. So with that being said, Casey, I'd like for you to just share your journey, and if there's a question that may arise, we'll certainly cut in. But I'm going to just hit mute, and I'd like for you to share your story. And I want to say again, it's my joy and my privilege to be your friend and your pastor and your mentor, and I am very thankful for what you put into the lives of people, my wife and mine, as well as others. So you take the microphone, and if you need me, tell me to unmute.
Thank you very, very much, Damon. And it's so true. I mean, we might not be able to change the world, but if we can change one person at a time or help one person at a time, then we're doing our job. And I've said that over and over again. This journey wasn't about me. This journey was about the people. And I didn't fight my fight for 10 years for me. My story is I'm 46 years old. I'm a single female with no children. And I bought my house in the Woodlands, Texas, 10 years ago. I've been a homeowner for 25 years. I've worked for 30 years straight. And when you hear my journey, it's like, and I share that with you, not because to pat me on the back or to make me, you know, mightier than anybody. It's not about that. It's just for you to understand, just because I was single with no children and didn't have a family of my own, I share my journey with ridicule, with prejudice, with people judging, the judgments, and all of this. And so everybody and anybody can say anything they want, but until they go through it and until they walk in my shoes or in anybody else's shoes, then it's not anybody's judgment to judge anybody or anything. So I will go back to April Fool's Day, 2009. April Fool's Day, 2009, I was working for NBC in San Antonio, WOAI television, making six figures a year, doing very well. I had zero debt, and I'm not saying this to make anybody else feel bad. I'm only sharing my story and telling you that I was the homeowners were targeted. And I will tell you all of the evidence and everything that I have done to uncover the corruption, to uncover the fraud, and to expose what this nation has done to its own people. And I mean, we have the American dream, and that American dream is to, you know, buy the house in the cul-de-sac with the white picket fence. And 18 million Americans as of today have lost their homes. There are so many broken families out there. There are suicides off the charts daily. There are so many divorces, so many, you don't see parents anymore together unless they're, you know, 50, 60 year is in a marriage. It just doesn't happen anymore. And, you know, so I'm going to go back to the timeline because timelines are very, very, very important. And this show we've dedicated 1 hour to, and we've already done, I think we're in 15 minutes already. So again, here's the timeline. Everybody wants to know this story because I've posted it. I've posted my journey. And I think it's just important for everybody to know before I'm gagged by the lawsuit that I filed against Bank of America that is sitting in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans, Louisiana. And the next step was going to be the Supreme Court. So April Fool's Day, 2009, I'm working for NBC in San Antonio, Texas. It's the WOAI affiliate, which I just mentioned a minute ago. Making six figures a year. I had zero debt. My credit score was like 800 plus. I was leasing out my house in the Woodlands, Texas, that I had purchased several years before. So my point in sharing that part with you is to tell you, I didn't need the bank's help. I didn't need my mortgage payment to go down. I didn't, like, when I received the letter April Fool's Day 2009, which it's not just me, every single homeowner has received or will receive this letter. And they will continue to do it, and they'll continue to run the commercials about the HAMP, the HARP, the Home Affordable Refinance Program. The, you know, and we're talking, you know, this was from the recession from 2008. People, we didn't go into a recession. It was our government that spends money that they don't have. It wasn't a recession. They threw us into a recession. On March the 4th, 2009, there is a 100 and I want to say 20 something page document that is that I have the doc I've got I've have this document and I've shared it multiple times and will continue to share it. But it's a document down from the White House from President Obama. I'm not saying that it didn't start previous, you know, generations or presidents before that. I'm not blaming anyone, but I'm just telling you exactly what it was. It was a document from March the 4th, 2009. Signed by President Obama, that showed where every single homeowner that was in a certain income bracket that had a certain home that was that you know was worth a certain amount of money. So, say if you lived in a $200,000 home and you made $75,000 a year, you are going to be targeted for the first go round of this financial crisis. Of this meltdown, of the mortgage industry and the housing crisis. It was a premeditated scam. It was a matrix that totally branded and totally targeted us as individual homeowners. Now, today, there's 18 million Americans that have lost homes. So I've been fighting this battle for 10 years. I have personally overcome 14 fraudulent foreclosure sell dates as of today. Did I win my case? Yeah, I won. But did I really win? It took 10 years out of my life. My father just passed away unexpectedly 6 months and 1 week ago. My sisters and I have an unrepairable relationship that happened because of the stress I was going through and me being an advocate for the little people, not because they didn't want me to or believe in me, but I did it because it was important for me to do it. It was important for me to have this journey. So I share this with you, and we're going to go through my timeline. So April Fool's Day, 2009, I received a letter telling me to skip two payments, telling me my next payment was not due for 60 days. They told me to skip May of 2009 and June of 2009. So I called Bank of America, who was my mortgage. First it was Countrywide, and then Countrywide, which, you know, Countrywide was designated to, you know, Angelo Mazzullo is the biggest crook in American history, yet he's not behind bars. I mean, somebody could go into a bank and, you know, rob the bank, and they're going to prison for life. But one man, Angelo Mazzullo from Countrywide, can steal and rob from millions and millions of Americans, yet he is living in his beautiful home in Santa Barbara, one of his beautiful homes in Santa Barbara, okay? This is unconstitutional. This is wrong on all levels. How can we as a government, unless the government is getting paid off, how can we accept that as Americans and allow 1% to take down 99% of us? How does that happen? Well, let me just fast forward a little bit. Not much, but. So I call the number on this letter. This letter was sent, by the way. It was sent overnight delivery, certified mail, to my residence. And my tenant, he called me at work. I was at work. And he said, Casey, he said, you received a FedEx package here from Bank of America. And he said, it looks pretty official. What would you like for me to do with it? And I said, open it up. And he said, okay. And so he opens it up and he starts reading to me this letter. And he said, well, it says here that you qualify to lower your mortgage payment, that your next payment's not going to be due for 60 days. And he reads to me exactly what was said. I said, why don't you fax it to me? Can you fax it to me at the station? And I'll take a look at it, and then I'll contact them. So I'm thinking that my mortgage company's trying to contact me. I was never a day late on my mortgage, nor did I need their help. 73 days from the date of that letter on April Fool's Day 2009, 73 days later, I'm fighting for my house in foreclosure. So they tell me I called the mortgage company, and I apologize if I'm skipping around a bunch. I just have so much that I need to share and get out there. So I called the mortgage company, and I said, okay, exactly what am I supposed to do here? They said, well, you send in your last two bank statements, you send in last two paycheck stubs, you send in your current bill with your residence as, you know, for the utility, and you send in this completed application, and you sign it. And I was like, okay. And I said, my very first question to them was, what about my credit? What about my credit? And they said, no, don't worry about it. Nothing's going to happen, and it's 60 days. Well, I just so happen to have worked for GMAC my high school years, and my first job out of high school at 18 years old was in the foreclosure department for Ford Consumer Finance out of Las Colinas, Texas, right outside of Dallas, Texas. So I worked for them, and I worked in the foreclosure department, as I mentioned. So I knew that 60 days was accurate, that you could actually do an extension for 60 days and it doesn't go against your credit. It doesn't go against anything. So I knew that to be accurate because of my history. My mother used to own a collection agency, so I am very familiar with the credit rating system. So when they told me the 60 days, I knew that that was accurate. So there wasn't a red flag that went up. There wasn't something that I was supposed to, you know, oh, this may be a scam. No, this was my mortgage company telling me, in Bank of America, telling me that I pre-qualified for something. Congratulations. Thank you for being a valued Bank of America mortgage customer. I mean, I'm thinking it's a congratulatory letter, you know, and I'm just like, wow, this is really cool. Now, what am I going to do with these 2 months of payments? I'm going to go out and buy me a Louis Vuitton. I mean, I didn't need a Louis Vuitton. I didn't need anything. But I had the extra money because they told me not to pay it. So it wasn't like I went out and, you know, or couldn't, you know, make up the payments by any means. So they told me to skip May. They told me to skip June. So June 18th, I called Bank of America. I called to find out what the status was because my July payment was coming due in 12 days, and I needed to know the amount to pay. They apologized to me, and they said, we're very sorry, but we're going to need some additional time, and we will send you out a letter, and you know, but we need additional time. So that additional time, I received a letter, and I still have the letter, from June 18th, 2009, telling me, we apologize for any inconvenience, and we are here to, we need 20 additional business days to get back with you on your mortgage. Thank you for being a valued Bank of America customer, and, you know, we apologize for any inconvenience. So I took that, and I was like, okay, they need 20 more days. I followed up and documented every date, every time, and every person I spoke with, and I never spoke to the same person twice, by the way. I was on the phone a minimum of 45 minutes to an hour waiting just to speak with somebody. So if you can imagine 45 minutes a day to an hour a day, just waiting on hold just to talk to somebody, just to find out what you're supposed to do about your mortgage payment. When my life was simple before, you know, I just, you know, it automatically came out of my bank account on the first of every single month. I didn't need to spend these extra, you know, I'm telling you 45 minutes to an hour before I got to speak with somebody. Then I got to speak with somebody, and again, I had to share my story over and over and over and over and over. As a matter of fact, 32 times is the amount of times that I had to send in documentation for the modification, for, and I didn't even ask for a modification. I'm like, how did I get here? This is a nightmare. Like, I didn't need this help. So why am I sitting here writing a letter about, you know, what my hardship is? My hardship isn't a hardship. My hardship is because you put me here. You intentionally put me here. That's what I found out in 2013 once I started really investigating this. So July 13th, 2009, my house was on the first foreclosure sell list. So we're talking 73 days after they offered me this amazing opportunity of skipping two payments. So once you skip two payments, they can immediately start foreclosure proceedings on you. So when they tell you, and these TV stations run these commercials telling you this HAMP, this home affordable mortgage protection or refinance programs, this is the biggest scam. And this is what is destroying families today. This is the number one cause of suicide rate. This is the number one cause of homelessness. We have 18 million homes out there. And who knows whether or not they're vacant or not. Have you paid attention to your neighborhood? So let me just go ahead and fast forward a little bit. 2009, I overcame four foreclosure sell dates. Now, if you recall, April Fool's Day 2009 is the date that I got the letter telling me congratulatory, okay, that you were so awesome that, you know, you received this big, nice award. I never knew that that year was going to be a year from hell for me. I mean, how could I go from an 800 credit score, making six figures a year, having zero debt, and being like, oh my gosh, my house is in foreclosure? I mean, how does that happen? So 2010, that's when the government stepped in and said, okay, us taxpayers are going to bail out the banks. We are going to give, you know, $89 million or billion dollars to bail out the banks. So the government premeditates it. So they put this matrix together. They send it down to the banks. The banks are responsible. Do you know that the bank received $1,500 just for the first step? If they get the homeowner to abide by the 60 days, the first step, the banks get $1,500 per loan that they do this to. And then they get reoccurring payments monthly for however long that they put that in there. So us taxpayers are not only paying for the banks to take our homes away from us, but the taxpayers are the ones getting their homes taken away. Yet we're the ones funding this corrupt system. We are the people. We are funding this corruption and not even knowing it. So, 2010, we bail out the banks. The taxpayers, we bail out the banks. Go check my notes. Go check my timelines. I'm right. It all sounds crazy. It all sounds bizarre. It's like, how could, you know, this happen? How could the government and the banks do this to the homeowners? How could that possibly happen? Well, folks, it's happened. Two out of three people that you know have either lost their homes or gotten them foreclosed, short sell, deed in lieu, investors buying them, you name it. There is hardly anybody any longer. I have people that I'm an advocate for across the nation, and now I'm starting, Damon, you know this, I'm starting to get Skype calls from the UK and Iceland and, you know, Sweden. I mean, like, this is now, they're following our suit. They're following us. We set the precedents for the nation, for the world. America sets the you know, who we are. Everybody looks after us or looks up to us. When I spent my time in Bali, as you were talking about, Damon, you know, everything was about America, you know, and I got disgusted because I'm like, you know, I'm sick of seeing how ridiculous we look as a nation. We have to come together and you know, this is about overcoming obstacles. Like, how do we fix this mess? Because people, it is a mess. It's a mess. So, 2010, we bail out the banks. Then all of a sudden, the government steps in and they say, oh, wait a second. The independent foreclosure review settlement. So the independent foreclosure review settlement was when the government sued the banks. Okay, so you remember, the government bails the banks out, then the banks, then the government sues the banks. So it's just like teeter-totter, teeter-totter. Where is the money? Where's the money trail? Or is there one? I mean, honestly, are we a broke nation? But my point in sharing this part with you is it's not fair for the homeowners to become homeless, to give their life savings, to do everything, and then fight for something that is theirs, something that they never intentionally had any bad, you know, harm in buying a house. I mean, it's the American dream, for crying out loud. It's the American dream. So, or at least they say it is. I think it's the American nightmare, to be honest with you, but that's just me. So let's, so if you understand that the bank bailout, okay, that we gave 80 something billion dollars to, and the bank executives that year received like 45, I used to could tell you the exact number in like which CEO, but Brian Mahoney from Bank of America received like $45 million in bonuses just that year. The year that the banks failed, and that the taxpayers, us, we're the taxpayers, people, the taxpayers paid to bail the banks out. The bank CEOs received bonuses more than what an average city makes in a year in salaries. They accepted these bonuses. That should be wrong. These CEOs should give back these bonuses. They didn't deserve them. These are legalized crooks. But it's 99% of us that are accepting this. So that was 2010. So then 2011, so then the independent foreclosure review came. So then it's like, okay, it seems like there's going to be some relief. Some relief. So this was like a $1 trillion deal. Well, Russ Consulting was the paying agent. The paying agent for the, that the government hired. So if you want to really know the details about that investigation, that there was an attorney that was an attorney in the White House that actually worked under the Obama administration. I'm not throwing stones. I'm not throwing rocks. I'm not saying Obama's administration did this. I'm just telling you what I know. So I don't want any political names, you know, being thrown out or judgments or anything like that. I'm just telling you the facts. So the attorney in the White House underneath Obama's administration was actually a partner in the law firm that did the independent foreclosure review out of Washington, D.C. The paying agent, Russ Consulting, first of all, didn't even send out the – and this is like a billion-dollar settlement to go to the homeowners, to go to the people affected. They lied and said that each homeowner was to get up to $125,000 in restitution or principal reduction on their mortgage. Did that happen? No. What happened? Russ Consulting, the paying agent, sent out the first batch of checks. They all bounced. They all bounced. Russ Consulting made half of what was supposed to go to the American people. Russ Consulting received as their payment. What we were supposed to get, which, again, we were lied about, $125,000 in restitution and or principal reduction. Did we get the principal reduction? No, we didn't get the principal reduction. I got the most, and I don't even know how they came up with the amount that I got. And guess how much that was? It was $2,000. $2,000 for something that I had been fighting at that point in time 2.5 years. And fought tooth and nail, fought. This is wrong. $2,000. That was a kick in the teeth, a slap in the face, a punch in the gut. Everybody else, the majority of everyone else, got $300. Can you imagine, like, fighting for your house? And the majority of these people had already lost their homes. The majority of these people just followed protocol and left their house and moved on and didn't fight the fight. But those of us that did stay to fight the fight got screwed over and over and over and over. So that was back 2011. 2012, they started up again. The HAMP, the HARP, you know, okay, we're going to do this modification. We're going to do this special forbearance. We're going to do this, this, and this. And I'm just like, do you not understand? Like, and people may say, well, how come you didn't make your payments? No, it wasn't that I didn't make my payments. It's they get you to skip two payments, and then immediately I caught it up. And then they just keep telling you, oh, well, now you're going to have. So they basically told me that my mortgage payment went down. So I started my special forbearance payments January of 2010. January 12, 2010, I started my special forbearance payments. Special forbearance, I didn't know what that meant to me. Like, I'm just like, just let me make my mortgage. Like, this is ridiculous. So I got everything caught up. I mean, like, I immediately caught up my payments whenever they told me that my house was in foreclosure. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So they tell me that I got qualified for a special forbearance plan dated January the 12th, 2010. They said my mortgage payment was $1,000 a month when originally it was $1,400 a month. So they said, just make $1,000 a month, and you're going to do that for 10 months, and then, you know, then you're going to go back to your normal payments, and then we'll tell you, you know, what we're going to do then. I'm like, okay, cool. And I was just excited because, like, I actually got payment statements, you know, with $1,000 on it. So, like, I thought that, okay, it's all cleared up now. Finally, it's cleared up, right? So 2010, I make all the payments on time. Oh, and by the way, I couldn't make my payments through my bank account. I could not pay them through automatic withdrawal from my bank. I had to send in certified checks or money orders. So I had to send in a money order or a certified check. And everybody else did too. Everybody else did because, you know, who keeps the certified check or a money order receipt, you know, 8 years down the line? Well, guess what, people? I do. And I did. So they sent me a letter. We're in 2010. They sent me a letter November the 5th, 2010, saying, thank you for fulfilling your obligation dated January 12th, 2010, for your special forbearance agreement. You are now current and up to date on your home loan payments. You may now resume making your normal monthly payments. Thank you for being a Valued Bank of America customer. December 3rd, I had sent in my December payment, and I'm like current up to date, but I really didn't pay too much. I didn't like, you know, I'm like, whatever, you know, I'm current up to date, whatever. I was never delinquent, people. And so I sent in my regular monthly payment, which is like the $1,400 and something the next month. They sent it back to me unacceptable because they told me that I was $17,000 in arrears, and it started the foreclosure proceedings all over again. So if you can imagine how stressful all of this is, you know, I'm working for the Walt Disney Company and I'm fighting the mortgage, you know, at this point, because I had left the NBC station, went to Austin and then came to Houston for Walt Disney. My job with Disney went from full-time to part-time and I ended up deciding to move out to Los Angeles. So that way I could go back into full-time work. And plus I just was so done with just the stress that this has caused me. I started doing a lot of research and a lot of investigations in June of 2013. In June of 2013, I started going down to the county courthouse in Montgomery County in the Woodlands, Texas, Conroe, Texas. And I started really digging in and doing a lot of research. And I went to the law library there, started like learning the law. I went to the county recorder's office, started pulling documents, learning about the system. And when I noticed that November the 5th, 2009, over 4,500, I think it was like 4,523 documents were signed by Kelly Jimenez, J-I-M-E-N-E-Z, the same day, 4,523 documents were signed by one person that were filed in one county in Texas on that one day. How is that possible? I mean, Kelly Jimenez must be, you know, a superstar if she can, you know, sign that many names, you know, sign her name that many times. But these were notice of trustees So these were basically, they were notice of trustees. Well, the very first name that I got to, it was Kathy and John Watkins. And typically I don't call out people by their name, but this one I will. Because Kathy and John Watkins actually were good friends of my brother-in-law's. And I thought, oh my gosh, Kathy and John went through it, what I'm going through, and so I'm going to call her. And so I called her up, and I'm like, Kathy, I need to talk to you. And she's like, what's going on? I said, I need to talk to you about your house. And she's like, what do you mean? You know, her daughter's cheerleader, son's quarterback, and so the pride and ego thing got in the way. And she kept denying, denying, denying. I'm like, Kathy, I found this on court records. It's not because somebody told me. I don't gossip. I don't talk about people. Because I researched it, and I found it. And then she's like, well, did you know it happened to so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so? And da-da-da-da, you know, and then, you know, I'm just like, are you kidding me right now? Like, I just called you to see if we could help one another, and now you denied it, but now you're telling on everybody else. I mean, that's really not that cool. But I understand. I mean, people's egos and pride and dignity and, you know, all of that, it gets in the way. It gets in the way of actually coming together and helping one another. So if you know that this happened to so many people, why didn't a flag get raised? You know, why didn't the flag get raised then? Why didn't you do something about it then? Because if you would have done something, maybe this wouldn't have happened. But again, it's our pride and our egos that get in the way. So I'm back to June of 2013, because that's when I started the deep down, like the inside investigation stuff. So I did that. And this was actually right after I got home from Rome. I was in Rome, Italy, with the former director of the New York Stock Exchange. His name is C. Edward Ward. And Edward Ward he was a good friend of mine, a mentor to me. And he knows my family, knows my father. He's a very intelligent person. I went to Rome with he to discuss a business that I had invented, and we went to Rome, and I got home from Rome, pulled into my driveway June 3rd of 2013, and this is when the story gets really interesting. My neighbor Larry Carpenter said to me, and by the way, my house is at number 90 West Honey Grove Place in the Woodlands, Texas, and my neighbor Larry Carpenter said to me, hey, Casey, he said, did you sell your house? And I said, no, Larry, I just pulled up in the driveway. I just got home from the airport, and, you know, I'm in a hurry because I've got to get to my niece's graduation. He said, well, no, did you sell your house? And I'm like, no, Larry, I didn't. He said, I'm like, why did you ask that? And he said, well, because you had all of this construction work done. I said, no, Larry, I put a new roof on it, but that was April. That was like 3 months ago. And he said, no, you had new cabinets put in. You had the house painted. And I'm like, Larry, I didn't, you know, I appreciate, you know, whatever, but no. And so Larry clearly looked at me like I was crazy because he knew what he had seen the week before. And he tried telling me, but I didn't pay attention. I didn't listen to him because I was too busy. I was running the rat race, right? So we're going to fast forward. So I do investigative work this whole time, right, for the entire half a year of 2013. We're going to fast forward to December 19th, 2013. And I'm going to tell you that that was a day that changed my life, that would change my life forever. December 19th, 2013, I left my house at 5:25 p.m. to go at two blocks away to a little Mexican food restaurant that I go to a lot, to meet one of the three law firms. These three law firms wanted to take my case, and they were taking it 100% on contingency because they loved the case. And I had every single one of my documents. I crossed every single T, dotted every single I. Who would think in 2009 to keep absolutely every bit of your communication, everything that you've done, every correspondence that you've received? I have everything. So it's the perfect case. And I pull out of my driveway, 5:25. Let me go back there. I tend to kind of get excited about this because, and especially the timeline, but I'm trying to make it easier for the listeners that are want to know the story. I just want you to know that December 19th, 2013 is the day that changed my life forever. And I just am repeating myself again on that. But when I pulled out of my driveway, 525, went to go and meet the attorney, Tom Duderstadt, and his wife, Sabrina, his wife at the time. Now they're getting a divorce or got a divorce in their house. This happened to them as well. And he needed my help because he's like, how did you stop this? How did you end up doing it? You know? So, you know, the people that are first to judge you are actually the people that come back and need your help. And I am open to helping the masses on this. I don't feel like it's going to stop. It's only going to get, it's, you know, if you can say it's going to get worse, it's, I mean, it's, they're not done. They're not done. I'll just put it to you like that. So I am with my attorney and his wife. I'm there for about an hour, hour and a half. And then I come home. And I had a couple of friends with me. You know, we were just hanging out at my house. And I got into the house, and I felt this weird vibe. I just felt like, I feel like somebody's been in my home. Like, I just feel it. Just the energy, the intuition, just like something. But there was no forced entry. So I couldn't say exactly what it was. But all I knew is I just felt the energy that somebody had been in there. I went into my closet to go change clothes and to come out and entertain my guests, and I could tell that somebody had been in my closet. Well, my documents were sat on my coffee table, and they were all in color-coded files. Bank of America was red. Countrywide was green. Blue was Amarillo National. Like, I had everything color-coded, and everything was, I mean, just very organized. Everything was in numerical order, alphabetical order, and, you know, by timeline order. My documents were out of place. The folders were, like, scattered through. I could just tell that somebody had been in there and went through my documents. And you want to say, well, why would they do that? That's crazy. You know, why would they do that? Well, guess what? They did, and they do it to a lot of people. I remember coming home from work on many occasions from Walt Disney. I'd get off work, I'd come home, and, you know, I would find the weirdest, like, little brackets and little screws and, like, a little screwdriver, like, on my bathroom counter, like, in my kitchen, just in different weird places. Knowing that I'm a single lady and living alone, I had, like, where did that, you know, but I would just sweep it into the drawer that was closest. But December the 19th, 2013, when I got home and realized what Larry Carpenter had said to me about what had happened 6 months prior, I immediately went and pulled out every drawer in my entire kitchen and in my entire bathroom, in both my bathrooms. There were wiretaps underneath my kitchen and my bathroom drawers. Okay, I'm a single lady living alone in a cul-de-sac in a very upscale neighborhood in the Woodlands, Texas, and I've got wiretaps underneath my kitchen cabinets and in my bathroom, so I can't even go to the restroom in privacy? That's disgusting. That is disgusting. That happened June of 2013. If you Google banks breaking into houses, you'll see the Huffington Post. You'll see Today, you know, the Today Show. You'll see ABC. You'll see CBS. They started talking about this in, you know, 2013. They started exposing this. But guess what? The banks shut the media up. What's that famous saying? You don't bite the hand that feeds you. Well, guess what? I've been in media for 16 years and on the advertising side of it, and you don't mess with the ones that spend the advertising dollars. So we as Americans did not have our voices heard. Not only did they put the wiretaps underneath my drawers, they also changed out the door hinges. The door hinges that go from my kitchen into my garage, because I would pull my car in the garage. So they knew every time I would leave and every time I would come home. They put one in my master bedroom, in my bedroom. And these are hinges with just, I sound like the crazy lady in the cul-de-sac, but when I saw these, I immediately flipped out. I'm just like, oh my gosh, what Larry told me was absolutely correct. Somebody has been in my house. And people would say, well, why would they do that? You know why? Look at Edward Snowden. He's a hero. He tried telling us what was happening to us. He tried sharing this with us. And we have, you know, everybody, you know, who's, you know, part of the corruption will tell you, oh, they're crazy or this, that, and another. Let me tell you, there are people making $80 an hour. I went and got my private investigator license. I make $80 an hour to go and do investigative work. $80 an hour. Of course, I only do it for mortgage fraud. And so I only do it for my own personal use, really. But I get hired off, you know, randomly from different agencies to go and go run a story. But I know that I'm kind of like all over the place because it's just so emotional for me to share what they did to me personally and privately and just how disgusting it was, not knowing like where you have your privacy anymore. So if you go and you like start, you know, researching camera hinges or cameras and screws, I sound crazy now, or how about cameras and light bulbs? Just know one thing, it always has to have a power source. So if you have a power source and you have like metal, like, you know, the copper around the door, you know, it's something that everybody should be aware of. And when I thought that this was just me, it like flipped me out. So I want to say this, that my neighbor, and this is very important. So December the 19th, 2013, as I mentioned, and keep bringing back the time, the next day I asked my neighbor, I said, did you see anybody? And it wasn't Larry, it was the neighbor next door to him. I said, did you see anybody come into my house whenever I left the other day? He goes, yes, actually, two trucks pulled up 5 minutes after you left. And he said, they were in your house probably 45 minutes. He said, because me and the boys, we had to leave to get a lacrosse practice. He said, I just thought that they were your friends. Otherwise, I would have said something. Why? He said, is something wrong? I said, yes, somebody has, you know, not broken into my house, like, physically, but because I have no, like, there hasn't been any, like, you know, doors kicked in or anything like that. So I figure it all out. I connect all the dots. And let me tell you how these dots work. June of 2013, Bank of America was hiring, and I have all of this as evidence. Bank of America was hiring contractors to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, to, in extreme and urgent situations, in quotations, break the glass. The qualifications for this job were the, you know how like now they've got that HVAC, they were all four-letter words, just like you've got HARP, H-A-R-P, HAMP, H-A-M-P. Pay attention to the three or four-letter words. Every time you see these are not good. That should be the first thing, the first trigger. Now, the HVAC, you know, of course, is like the air conditioning unit, but there were so many different ones. So I started investigating what each one of those were. The majority of the qualifications for this job to work for Bank of America was to have telephone communication surveillancing. There are command houses set up in subdivisions for surveillance. It sounds crazy, but it's true. In my subdivision alone, so we're going to fast forward to 2014, just a couple months into 14. So February 14th, it was Valentine's Day of 2014. I've decided to move out to Los Angeles to pursue my career with Walt Disney Company and then CBS. I am in Katy, Texas. I'm 45 minutes from the house, and I call my dad, and I'm like, Dad, my energy's telling me it's not time for me to go. I need to come back home. He's like, well, come back home. Don't go yet. I come back home, and my father lives three blocks away from me. My sister built one of the first houses in our subdivision. And so, you know, I know this area very well. My parents have been there 20 years this year, or, yeah, something like that, or, yeah, 20 years this year. I bought my house there 12 years ago. So I started going in. So God directed me to come back. this wasn't like, it was very intuitive and intuition, but it was my energy. And you pay attention to your energy. Pay attention to what you are supposed to do, to where God's going to guide you. So with that being said, I turned around, I came back home. Well, the first foreclosure sell date is always the first Tuesday of the month. So I come back home and I start seeing all of these houses with lease signs in the yard. And these lease signs, I thought, oh my gosh, what's going on? So I call a realtor. I have the realtor come and take me into these homes. That's when I realized that my home wasn't the only one targeted. For the wiretaps underneath the sinks or underneath the cabinets, the drawers, underneath the, in the hinges, the door hinges. I wasn't the only one. This wasn't just my personal party. This was something more, this was very serious. So my last count, just in my subdivision alone, 45 homes. Guess what we all had in common? Foreclosures, deed and lose, short sales. It was 18 Slick Bay Place, 18 Honey Grove. I mean, like, I can spit out every single address of the houses that this happened to. They're sending in contractors. What they're doing, I just realized we've only got 9 minutes left of the show. It's gone by so fast. What you guys need to know, we've only got 9 minutes left, and I still need another 3 hours to finish this. But the most important thing for you to know is that the homes, they are breaking the glass in the garage door. Hence, in quotations, break the glass. They're breaking the garage door, the window in the garage door. They are going in and changing out back door locks. I'm not telling this to terrify you. I'm telling this so people can wake up. Pay attention. You think somebody's not coming into your house? You're wrong. You're very wrong. They're coming in. They're coming in when you're leaving. They can bypass any security system. So I need to kind of fast forward since we only have just a few minutes left, because I need to talk about the scariest part of this is overcoming heavy metals toxicity poisoning. So it was June the 10th, 2014, and I had to go to a doctor for my cough. I had a really, really, really bad cough. And so I went to the doctor, and he said, you know, I'm concerned about this, but I'm more concerned with your cough. So I'm going to send you over to Dr. James Kaplan, the pulmonologist here in Beverly Hills. And I'll follow up with you in 6 months, but I need for him to take care of you right now, because we've got to work on this first. So I went to Dr. James Kaplan, still my doctor, an amazing, amazing doctor. Dr. James Kaplan ran my labs. He ran ANAs and CKs. ANAs are anti-nuclear antibodies. CKs are your enzymes. My CKs were 10,713. Normal is 29 to 168. My ANAs were consistent for a year and a half of 640, and normal is 40 or below. And 640 is what mine were consistent with. I got so sick, I would just walk and just collapse. And that happened three or four times. I think four, but definitely three. And Damon, I shared with Frank Shankwitz that night my meeting with him, that I had collapsed that one day and I had a concussion, but I still was not going to miss our meeting. So I got hospitalized multiple times at Cedars-Sinai, $2 million worth of medical. And then I ended up doing major research because I just stayed sick. They made me take out disability from Walt Disney and from CBS, and I was too proud to even take out the disability because in my mind I was like, but I'm not disabled. I'm not disabled, so how can you brand me this? Well, I needed to get over my ego, and I needed to just get well. HR was just like, Casey, you just need to take this time, and you need to get well. You know, it's okay. Come back when you're ready. Come back when you're well. So I ended up going to a doctor in Texas, in Jasper, Texas, named Dr. Sessions. Dr. Sessions ran a heavy metals toxicity test on me, cut off the back of my hair. He took my urine, and he took my blood. My test results, that was on October 13th, 2015. My test results came back November the 3rd, 2015. Sally, the RN from Dr. Sessions' office, called me, and I was back in L.A., and she said, Casey, where are you? And I said, I'm in L.A., and she goes, how are you feeling? And I said, well, I mean, I don't feel well, but, you know, that's just standard, I guess. And so she said, Casey, she goes, you're sick. She said, your toxicity test came back, and she said, if you were to be standing in a dark room and looking into the mirror, you would literally be glowing right now. You'd literally be glowing. She goes, when can you get back to Texas so we can start treatment immediately? And I said, I'll get on a flight tonight. You know, I'll be there tomorrow morning. So I started my treatments November the 5th, 2015. Remember the 5th of November. I'll never forget it. I need to say this. April 19th of that previous year, I went back to my house from L.A., went back to my house in the Woodlands, and I kept finding these bottles, these weird bottles of, like, food-grade hydrogen peroxide and just different things, different bottles that clearly did not belong in my house. So I drove over to the – I called Dr. Kaplan. I said, Dr. C, I said, do you think that this could be what I'm ingesting and this is why I may be sick? And he goes, absolutely. He said, you get these bottles, you get on a plane, you get back here, we're testing for heavy metals toxicity poisoning. And I just thought, I can't fly with this, especially if it's toxic. And I don't need it around me. And so I recall throwing away the same bottle four prior times. So this was the fifth bottle, and it was half gone. It was half empty. And it was food-grade hydrogen peroxide, which is highly, highly toxic if ingested the wrong way. There was also a bottle of termite poison that was underneath my counter in my garage that was next to paint. Well, when I went for that and, like, went to go grab it to see it, I had gloves on, and I got it. Well, the lid wasn't on tight, so it spilled. And I mean, there was only like 25% left in the bottle, a fourth of it. So three-fourths of it was gone. Well, this termite, like, liquid is something that you have to get through like an orkin, like you have to be like a certified dealer to have something of this magnitude. I drove over to the fire department, took pictures of the bottles, showed the fire department. Within 5 minutes, hazmat was dispatched out to my house. My house showed up with cypermethium, which is a highly toxic chemical if ingested, that was in my bathroom drawers. And that is what was making me sick. So with that being said, they didn't expect for me to live past a week. They didn't expect for me to survive. I ended up going down to Honduras. I've got 90 seconds left for the show. So I went down to Honduras to Yusha Village. Dr. Sebi, S-E-B-I, who's the doctor for Michael Jackson, for Magic Johnson. He cured Magic Johnson of AIDS. A lot of different celebrities go to him. Keith Mitchell and his mother and I went down there. I was down there for 10 days, and Dr. Sebi saved my life. 18 days after I left Yusha Village, Dr. Sebi was arrested and was murdered. I've got 60 seconds left of this series and of this show. It's very emotional for me to share. It's hard for me to share. I have accepted a settlement agreement with Bank of America to drop my case. Is it the right thing to do? I don't know. It's what I'm doing, not because I'm not going to be a voice for the people, but because I want my life back. I'm tired of being harassed. I'm tired of being, you know, followed. I'm tired of all of that. And, you know, the death of my father just really took a toll on me and just made me decide I just need to end any of this stuff. God needs me for a bigger purpose, and I'm listening to that. And we don't have very much longer, so Damon, I want to thank you. We've got 10 seconds left. Damon, thank you for doing this show with me. And
yes,
I love you all.
Make sure that you write into our email address, connectingthedotswithkc@gmail.com.
Thank you very much. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.